It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
But we are concerned here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. You know what fear is? Fear is an emotion that says, you know, I should be doing something. Yeah, I'm a whoa, what's up? I should be doing something. I should be, you know, like, you know, getting my AR or running, one or the other. You know, it's that fight or flight thing. And I tell you, you know, one thing, I tell you a little personal secret. When I go to the movies and there's something that startles me, you know, me and my wife, the kids, or even we're watching at home or something, and they do the, you know, the alien pops out of the chest or something like that. I mean, you want to see some fast reflexes? Boom, my fists come right up in front of my face. I mean, it's like light, man, you better not have popcorn or drink in my hand, man. I mean, wham, I'm just, it's in that automatic defensive reflex mode of, and that's going to save my butt someday if it hadn't already. But I mean, you know, I'm like, wham, just immediate reaction. And it's how my brain works, I guess, just, you know, the being startled about it. And I see this stuff, I'm like, whoa, I get a reaction. And what happens if you don't react to this fear, this worry? And the fear turns into worry, and then depression, and then all kinds of stuff. Worry is an emotion I've used as a tool to remind me that I need to do something. If you're worrying about something, it means that you better get off your lazy butt and do something. I mean, you need to just start, you know, Swiss cheesing the project, you know, take a little bite, do something, because if you don't, it just eats into you. You spend all your time worrying about what it is rather than, you know, taking your energy and actually doing something about it. Because once begun, at least half done. I mean, you know, you just, so worry is an emotion I despise. I hate it. It is a waste of time. So I convert that worry into action. That's how and why I get so much done, because I'm always got something to worry about. And I don't want, and you know what I love? I mean, I love my family, my wife and everything, but I tell you what, it's a, you know, real close second up there. Sleep. I want to go to bed. I'm going, man, I'm sleep. Me and sleep buddies. You don't have sleep, man, you don't got a whole bunch of else. I tell you, you can't be productive. Your health goes. I love to sleep. So while all of my government buddies out there are having all this worrying about how they're going to, you know, screw with you and what you're going to do because they're doing it, you know, I bet they're not sleeping that well. Or they got plenty of chemicals they're trying to take for it. Where, you know what? You know what helps alleviate, you know, anxiety and worry and fear and all this other stuff? Accomplishment, action, doing something, get off your butt, you know, quit sitting on your hands. You just do something. You know, the thing is that when you do that, then, you know, hey, I go to bed, I'm like, okay, now I got stuff. Yeah, I got a to-do list. You know, what my worry is about, you know, I'll forget what I got to do. So I just write it down in little 3x5 cards. You know, this is what I got to do, what I got to do. And I set it over there and I got a bunch of cards in front of me, little things I want to talk about, things I got to do. You know, today I got to go get a cue speaker. You know, we need, you know, for the control room, some little dinky speaker thing. And I keep trying, it's just being a pain in the butt. We need that thing for a talkback deal. I got to, today, man, I put a big giant note, man, I got to get that. I'm tired of worrying about it. So we go do that. Done. What are you doing? Are you still worrying? Are you just worried all the time? Are you afraid? Let me tell you why. Because you're not doing anything. I don't want you to sit here and listen to me. You know, you take this information and you do something. Feel better. You make a little bitty sign and you put it in your, you know, the rear window of your car. You'll feel a lot better about it. It's therapy. When we come back, we'll be with Pal Gamble, senior editor at Freedom's Phoenix. We'll be right back.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Operational plan. The final homeland security operational plan. Now, here's just findings from the assessment. This is what they letter they send to each of the governors. This is what they're doing. This is how they're bringing you all under one thing, right? And this is what it says in the report. Links to this are on top of Freedom's Phoenix right now. You go look at this stuff. This section presents summary findings prepared by each of the USG departments. USG, what the heck's that? United States government departments, I guess, something. Anyway, so USG departments, it's more departments, regarding their reviews of the state's operating plans for combating pandemic influenza. HHS, on behalf of the participating departments, Lord knows what that is, has provided each state with more detailed state-specific findings. For strategic goals A and B, this section discusses each operating objective in turn. First, through generic statements about response and recovery plans in a particular thematic area, and even through summary data. For strategic goal C, this section of the report addresses all seven. Now, here we go. Addresses all seven operating objectives with a generic narrative before presenting summary data for each one. Then it goes on a couple more sentences. Now, the main thing is that for strategic goal C, this section report addresses all seven operating objectives. Seven operating objectives. We'll go take a look at what those are a little bit here. But I want you to understand. This morning I talked with one of the public relations representatives from the Phoenix Police Department, where I started this entire line of inquiry, because it was just as much education for him and the media and Channel 4 in Tucson and Channel 15 here and Channel 33, the Hispanic channel. We made sure we cultivated that relationship with the newspapers, and now we're doing a project with Channel 10 and Channel I can't remember what the other one was.
Univision.
Yeah, no. It was. See, we have Channel 12 here as part of Gannett, which is part of the Arizona Republic.
Tucson. Channel 4 and Tucson.
Yeah, Channel 4 and Tucson is the one that we started doing down there. But there's two numbers, and I'll tell you the project that we did, here in a little bit. But it's 15. So 15 and 10 here. And the reason is because ABC and CBS are separate from the newspaper here. So if you're talking to the newspaper, you're talking to the same group, azfamily.com. They're just all the same thing. What happens is we kind of have this planned. We set it out. We know where we're going to, get the people all worked up, because they don't care unless it's people that are just pounding the table. So then they have to spin it. They have to respond, because they will not respond until everybody already knows. You saw that in the first hour. You could hear on CNN, they're not going to have anything until, have Dr. Paul come up and talk about his relationship with the Republican Party and until everybody already knows. And they have the big controversy on YouTube, and the internet's all abuzz with Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina saying, this will never be party Ron Paul. They love when you say stuff like that. So then they're going to have to beat down this Ron Paul thing. They get him on there. It doesn't work. It never does. But you have to start from the bottom up to get these guys doing this. So what do? We go to the Phoenix Police Department. We go to the union. We go to their public information officers. We go to the mayor's office. We go to the city manager. We go to the fire department. We go to the county. We go to, because we know what the end result is. The end result is somebody's going to make somebody do something. And who has that power? Well, they're going to state level. It's homeland security kind of thing. And then they're going to set whatever criteria for them to enact that. What is this emergency? Emergency. We've been through this for 20 years. They always declare an emergency for things like it's emergency legislation to pass this bill. So because under emergency legislation, you can't challenge the bill when we want to do eminent domain on this little old lady's house so we can build a football stadium or a baseball stadium or a basketball stadium. See, they always use emergency to forego any kind of legal action. Because that's how the laws were. So they said, you can do anything except when it's an emergency. You're not allowed to challenge us. Now, this is one thing that I found of interest in the Constitution when it talked about habeas corpus. We did a show on the Constitution. Is it, you know, the Constitution, or, you know, does it really provide us some freedoms? And what happened was Eric was in on the side of, you know, I vote anarchy. And you were looking at habeas corpus, that you can say, hey, man, produce the body. You know, you got to put me before. You can't just send me off to Guantanamo. And in the U.S. Constitution, Section 9, it says you shall not be deprived of habeas corpus unless the government, you know, is threatened. We can pull that when we want. I had no idea that was in there. They could pull it when they wanted. Wow. So now we're in a situation to where you have the Homeland Security, which is now headed by who? Janet Napolitano was our governor, and she used to be U.S. Attorney General, you know, Assistant Attorney General. She was Attorney General here in the state of Arizona. You know, she was a criminal defense attorney of corrupt politicians in the early 90s. You know, I mean, getting them off, you know. And then suing for her payment for her fees. And then the guy she got off, you know, that they had on videotape taking money, $4,000 bribe, becomes her co-chief of staff when she's governor. I mean, these are the people you're dealing with, okay? So now we're in a situation to where we have the state is big time in debt. They need federal bailout. What kind of strings is going to come with that? They're going to say, you know, you need to have you got a little pandemic thing going on here. You know, and if we need one, we'll make sure. You think you're going to blow up the Golden Gate Bridge and the St. Louis Arch to get what they need? You know, maybe they'll just have a few thousand people drop dead from something. You see, it's just, it's always, they don't need a building going down. They just need, you know, cute little white girls of 8 years old sitting there suffering with, you know, boils in their faces. You see my point? They will create something because they already have the infrastructure in place to give them what they always wanted, ultimate power over your body. Now, who better to ask than the guy that was in charge of the bioterrorism lab for the state of Arizona that's now Freedom's Phoenix senior editor, Mr. Pal Gamel. Now, I know you think vaccines, you know, have their uses.
I do.
So tell us about vaccine. And then, you know, what the problems are. A lot of the things that's coming out is what the vaccines are in or how they're prepared. Or they want to make a gazillion of them in 1 year and keep them for 20 years on a shelf. So they go putting a bunch of stuff in there. I mean, you know, tell us about vaccines in general and why we should be concerned.
Well, all vaccines carry a risk. And so they're not, I don't care what somebody wants to tell you about them being absolutely safe or perfectly safe. If they're absolutely safe, perfectly safe, why do you have to sign some sort of waiver saying, I won't sue you if I have all these illnesses that you may or may not list? Actually, by law, they're supposed to give you something that tells you all the things. And I've been vaccinated before at these little clinics or whatever that are in these stores. And I'll tell you something, I've never seen any sort of indicators that should be provided. I imagine, you know, the law does say you have to request it, but essentially what you're doing is you're
Jet and Drew went and requested it on tape four places and they wouldn't give it to them.
They wanted the insert, the package inserts, the vaccine that come with the vaccine, which they should be able to get because they throw them in the trash anyway. And you're right, I laughed, I chuckled when they basically, oh no, you can't have those. But I'll tell you something, on those inserts, they won't tell you, those inserts don't list what the ingredients that are inside the vaccine, or at least it's not a complete list of ingredients in the vaccine. So
what are we be concerned? You know, tell me how vaccines work. Why would we even have them?
The vaccine works by...
Give me a glass of orange juice. I mean, you know, why am I doing it?
When you get that injection, you're being injected with either one of two things, either part of the virus or bacterium that you're being protected against, whatever causes that illness, or you're being injected with an actual live version of that organism that is considered attenuated, meaning it will not cause disease, or the disease it will cause is much, much less than the one that you might encounter. And there's part of it, you just heard me say might encounter, that's part of an equation on anybody taking a vaccine is, you know, what are the likelihoods of me catching this or not catching it? What are the outcomes if I do catch it? Is it long-term disability? Is it death? You know, and supposedly, at least, the people determining whether or not vaccines go on the market are making these calculations. What are the odds of somebody dying from the disease versus dying from the vaccine? And that's a legitimate question to ask. People do die from vaccines every year. And people get sick from vaccines every year. And you have to ask, what are the odds of getting sick from vaccine versus the organism?
Yeah. Don, what do you want to say, Don?
I've been doing a lot of research on these vaccines, especially since we were trying to educate our daughter-in-law about the dangers. And basically, these vaccines, when they're given to you, it's not a lifelong immunity. It's a short-term thing. So your regular immune system is going to deal with it lifelong, where these vaccines, there's got to be something wrong.
And, you know, and you have the stuff that they put in it is lifelong disability, you know?
It depends on the vaccine. That's correct. The flu vaccine, for instance, the flu season lasts 5-6 months. And heck with this H1N1, apparently it's a friggin' year-round event. The vaccine on the flu vaccine is really only good for about 3 months. And then your immune system, which detects these what they call antigens, which are parts of the virus or the bacterium, you have an immune response to it, and then it wanes because there's nothing there. Now, the interesting thing about the difference between a live vaccine and a just a subunit vaccine, part of a virus or bacteria that they're injecting into you, is the part one generally lasts just for a few months. The live virus one may very well last for many years.
Mm-mm-mm. You know, while you're speaking, I went and looked at Strategic Goal C. Okay, they were talking about it. And we got, let's find out what Strategic Goal C is. Sustain support 17 critical infrastructure sectors and key resources. Well, you know, that's like, you know, mainly continuation of government. We got to make sure the government's going. But the last sentence, this says it all right here. Finally, DHS and HHS must continue to partner in order to promote the planning with health departments, mostly in the state's health departments, you know, that are in charge of this. And in adding support to variables tracked for HHS pandemic funding grants.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Nah. We know what's going on, y'all. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in studio, Pal Gamble, senior editor of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And he was head. What was your title anyway?
Oh, well, my title was Public Health Microbiologist 3. Well, what I did was I was the founder and manager of the state laboratories. State Public Health Laboratory's Bioterrorism Detection Section. I founded that in the very beginning of the year 2000, and I left in April of 2003.
Right during 9/11 thing.
Well, 9/11 was obviously 2 years earlier, but, well, 1.5 years.
No, they're in the middle of this. I mean, you know, you had the bioterrorism thing. Then all of a sudden we're under attack.
You had the anthrax thing happening right at the same time, basically, about a month later. But
you know, that was another thing. Yeah. I remember back then, and you knew, you're going, oh, this is weaponized. You're going to trace this back. It's going to be at some military arsenal had this stuff.
Yeah, I was pretty convinced that it was going to end up being out of one of our arsenals, to be quite honest, or Russian. But it was being touted as high-grade stuff at the time, and the fact that the Sun Building had been three different people had at, in the Sun Building in Florida. If you don't remember, it's a newspaper outlet. They were the Bob Stewart was the first gentleman to come down with it, and he died from it. And then two others got sick in that building from it. At the time, we were basically told, "Oh, unless it's weaponized, this aerial spraying stuff just can't happen unless it's been weaponized." And then later on, now they're like saying, well, gosh, I guess it wasn't weaponized. There was nothing special about this, and amazingly, you know, it managed to infect like something like 6 dozen people, you know, throughout the nation on the east side of.
Well, what makes it weaponized? I mean, how did you know what was it? It started coming out that it was.
Basically, you have that's what the supposedly government leaks were that were being reported in the New York Times and others was that the FBI. You know, people that wanted to remain anonymous with the FBI were saying it was weaponized. What makes it weaponized is you have anthrax as a bacterium. It produces a spore so that it can when adverse environmental conditions come, it can basically survive them by sporulating, going dormant, and waiting until the conditions improve. And these spores are like just perfect for bioweaponization because they're just really resistant to anything. So basically, you can let these things create the spores. You can strip the bacterial sheath or whatever, the husk that's left of them. You got the spore inside. You can strip that away, make them nice and clean. And then you can coat them with all sorts of stuff to make sure they don't stick together with electrostatic charges or anything. And you can even coat them with stuff that makes them more resistant to sunlight, because sunlight is a great inactivator if you're going to be spraying these outside. And they're just the perfect size. They're like 1 micron in size, just perfect for inhalation and setting up infections, which is, you know, part of their infectious process is they do that in the wild. The animals basically go through these fields where animals have died from anthrax infections and bled out in these fields. These things sit there for years, dormant. You get some other grazing animals come through eating grass or whatever, and they apparently inhale these things in the dust and the dirt that are down in the ground and come down and die themselves and repeat the life cycle. So
this is it came down that these were had these processing for these spores?
That's what they were originally reporting. Now they're basically saying no. They issued a big report that says no, there's no evidence for any weaponization, and we don't know where these stories came from. Of course, these stories were basically anonymous, you know, FBI people that want to remain anonymous that these reporters got.
Well, didn't they strain bring the strain back to an AIM strain that was
original? It is an AIM strain. AIM strain is actually from Texas, but it was sent, the history behind it was sent to the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture lab in Ames, Iowa, and it got the name Ames strain from there. I think it was sent back in the 50s. And the Ames USDA, of course, being due diligent government lab, they disseminated it to anybody who wanted it. They sent him a sample, you know, Saddam Hussein, whomever might want it. But sure, here you go. I'm really not making fun of that. But the beauty of the Ames strain is it's exceptionally virulent. Texas and Louisiana are endemic for anthrax, and those strains throughout anthrax is actually found throughout the northern hemisphere. But in Texas and Louisiana, those particular strains are literally the most virulent there are in the world. So they're, you know, essentially sought after if you really want to weaponize
something. Well, I mean, you have the capacity. I mean, your lab, and you have the skills, and you were trained to do DNA analysis and find out where, you know, things come from and get their original. And that was part of what this was all about. They're going, this anthrax was this strain, right?
Right. They said and that was part of it. They said it was Ames, and that, you know, the real problem with that, I think, was that you had people out there saying, oh, my God, it's Ames strain. It's got to be weaponized, blah, blah, blah. You had FBI agents who had no friggin' clue running around. They were going to any lab that said they had an Ames strain and, you know, demanding access or, you know, information, blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, I think cooler heads finally said, hey, look, this thing's so widely distributed around the friggin', you know, over the last few decades that trying to track down the just by AIM strain is meaningless. You're going to have to do a lot better than that. You're going to have to get genetic markers that are particular for this particular strain.
I feel so much better. You know, there's something coming. We know this. They prepared for it. You prepare for it. We'll talk about it more when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to.
I got to take my shot. That's what he's telling me. Here and declare your independence. I love that song, but I want to make sure that you get here. I'm looking through these reports we've made available at the top of freedomsphoenix.com right now. The pandemic whole package that they've been dealing with state by state by state by state, and our state, of course, then finally I got admission that yep, we're under this plan. All right, this is what it was. In May 2006, the Homeland Security Council released, this is a letter to the governors, Homeland Security Council released the National Strategy for Pandemic Influenza Implementation Plan so the strategy could be realized, okay? This is the plan that contains objectives and action items for each responsible agencies. Timelines, benchmarks are assigned, blah, 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 for the states to do, and then report back, okay? It is critical that you ensure all agencies, education, emergency management, public safety, transportation, etc., are actively engaged in the planning and submission process. All right? The Department of Homeland Security will also disseminate this message to their state and local stakeholders. Thank you for your improving your compliance with blah, blah, blah. And this is Michael Olevit, and it's CC'd to the Honorable Michael Chertoff, Secretary of Homeland Security. And then we went to, Janet Napolitano. I mean, upgrade, downgrade, what was the deal? So it's just another grade, same thing. So what happens is they are already planning this. They've already, this was started years ago, many years ago, after Powell left, right when they were doing all this, like, hey, man, I'm done. So this is in place that they're doing this where they're going to either mandate you take the shots. Or, and the only thing that's resisting this is people going, oh, heck no. The mandate that you take the shots or you get quarantined. And the only reason they allow you to get quarantined, you don't have to take the shot. You can opt for quarantine if you claim religious reasons. And everybody's going to find Jesus or some religion from now on saying, I have a religious reason for not taking this. And then, okay, well, we'll step in the jail cell. You know, what do you know about quarantines? You know, because, I mean, this was your thing, man. There'll be, Powell's going to be involved in this. You know, what's this quarantine thing?
Actually, I was initially involved in some of the discussion that went on. But I can tell you that 2002, a law professor published about a 50-page treatise in which he basically is right after the anthrax thing, the anthrax outbreak, the nationwide response, public health response, and 2002, things started dying down, and this guy published this little treatise that basically was on the inadequacy of the state's quarantine laws. And he basically, at that time, there was speculation, probably by Chertoff or whomever at the time, that, well, we'll just quarantine people if we have these outbreaks, nationwide. Well, he basically came and said, sorry, but states have quarantine laws. Federal government doesn't have quarantine laws. That's not your bailiwick. And then he went on to basically talk about the different states, what their quarantine laws were, and basically said, hey, these quarantine laws are woefully inadequate for modern times. They're basically written in the 10s and the 20s and the 30s. And basically, what was the big inadequacy? Well, it was immunity. Oh, not immunity as in a vaccine against a virus, but immunity from civil suits and getting arrested. Because, if you're a government official and you grab somebody and throw them in a hole somewhere, quarantine, and then later on it's found out that, oh, you didn't have any authorization to do this, well, you're in a lot of trouble. So that was one of the big pushes. We got to make sure that our government officials all get immunity from, anything they might do in the name of public health.
So laws got changed.
Oh, yeah. So now you saw a nationwide push by the Centers for Disease Control under the bioterrorism program to every state to upgrade and push for an upgrade of its quarantine laws. And they, of course, they pushed out the model. They said, here's the model law. And, of course, that model law puts them in the federal government in more of a position of authority.
Insulated and with more power.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, at any rate, and so it's up to the states to pass whatever they want, of course, but I can almost guarantee every listener out there in the United States, if you go, I'm willing to bet you in Canada too, you go and look at your state laws, they've been changed in the last few years to upgrade their quarantine powers and authorities and immunities. And, it's interesting. I was just looking because you called me up this morning, so you do that. So I quickly went over and looked. And if you look in Arizona's revised statutes at Title 36 dash, I think it's 787, it's 780 something, it's around there. There's three sections, Article 11, Article 12, and Article 13. And I thought it was interesting. I started reading these articles at the end of Article 11, and all of a sudden you come to Article 12, and there's no laws there. It just says Article 12, chapter Article 12, and it has a title, Public Health Emergency or something like that. And then it goes on to Article 13. Well, if you look at the numbering of the laws, you know, they're consecutive in Article 11, and then where they pick up in Article 13, there's 32 laws that are missing. And if you actually go play with the website thing and and change the numbering up there on the web, say pick any Article 11 thing and then change it so it should fall in the middle of where Article 12 is on the computer website links, you get a little response that those haven't been posted yet. And I'm like thinking, oh, this is interesting. I'm going to have to do some digging to see, because I'm sure it's been passed. If I go look at the legislative record, I can find out what those laws are.
Okay, now is this state or federal?
This is Arizona revised statute.
Because we had put that up. You know,
I will be putting an image of it up when I get back and get some time to
do this. Because this is what we did. I went through and finally, you know, I knew where this is a simple way of doing it. You go Arizona revised statutes. And you just put that in a Google search.
Yeah,
and then eventually you'll get into where it has a listing of all of our statutes.
It's Title 36.
Then they'll have, you know, what was passed this year. You can go and do all kinds of different searches. And I just search for the word emergency. And all these laws come up that they just did. And you start looking into them. And the emergencies are all about giving the state more power and authority under emergency declaration by the governor. So this whole thing, and I'm going, as the federal government has, I don't know what's it up to. It's $1 billion or something, some ungodly amount of money that they want to give to Arizona if we'll only comply, you know. So I'm going, I see this coming. And as you look at the members of this working group that they're doing on this, you'll see Department of Commerce, Defense, Education, Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, of course, you know, Interior, Justice, Labor, State, Transport. Everybody's on here except Congress, you know? I mean, where's the people representation in this thing?
I will warn you, yes, the law, I started reading earlier this morning, and it does say the governor enact an emergency, you know, declaration of public health emergency, and that all sounds really good, right? But if you read the rest of the laws that are there, a whole slew of government officials can actually declare somebody infected or contagious or whatever, and literally have them grabbed and tossed into, you know, a nice, comfortable cell, I suppose.
Well, have they ever done this before?
Yes, they did. They did it a couple years ago. Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And I'm sure, in one sense, he probably loved the attention, but I'm sure he was not necessarily thrilled because they didn't have the adequate facilities. They grabbed a guy who had tuberculosis. He had what they called untreatable TB. It isn't necessarily untreatable, but it's something out of Russia that's come out that basically is resistant to everything. TB is a nasty organism. It is very difficult to treat as it is. It takes literally a year's worth of anti biotic treatment that's spread out on a daily basis over a year. You have to be taking 5 or even 6 antibiotics a day over a 1 year period, and you can't basically be sloughing off on this. And I can't remember whether this guy was considered untreatable, and that's the reason why they pinched him, which would be a hell of a interesting thing from an anti-government standpoint, or if it was the fact he wasn't taking his medications. And, you know, this guy represents a communicable disease. He could basically be spreading this, just like Typhoid Mary did back in the
so what'd they
beginning
do
of the 20th century. He was locked up for months. They were treating him, forcing him treatment or just making sure he did his treatment. I don't think it was a thing of force. He just wasn't doing it. And after several months, I think he finally had a judge who said, you can't keep doing this. You can't keep this guy there. But what I imagine is, how would you like to be a jailer down there? I mean, like, I wouldn't want to touch this guy. I wouldn't even be in the same block with the guy.
Wow. So should they have had this power? Or is this the solution?
And that's a great question. Does somebody, it goes back to the Typhoid Mary. You know, Typhoid Mary was a cook, and she was basically, you know, they traced back a typhoid outbreaks, multiple typhoid outbreaks to her. And it turned out she was a carrier of the disease. The disease did not harm her, but she carried it, and she basically exuded it, and basically infected people she came in contact with. And at that time, there was no treatment. So then became a real question is, what do we do with this person? They refused to basically stop doing what their livelihood is, which is preparing meals. That's what she did. It's the only thing she knew how to do back in the, you know, I think this is like the 19-teens
or something. Teens, yeah.
And so they basically, you know, ultimately they locked her away on a friggin' island, I think in New York, somewhere, you know, by herself. Quarantine island.
You know, there's always going to be a poster child for this kind of stuff, and they'll expand that into, you know, they want to do.
You always have, you know, it's for the children. You always have the great things you push with, and here's a woman who's definitely a threat to society, and, you know, she was changing her name because things would get out about her, and so basically change her name so she'd get employment elsewhere, and then typhoid outbreaks would start again. And for all I know, this guy with the TB, same thing, is... You know, what do you ultimately, if you refuse to do it, what do you do with them? And you're right. That's the good question.
Well, then you get to, instead of it kind of, you know, become a criminal action. I mean, it was like these guys that would go around and intentionally infect people with HIV and so on. You know, I mean, these are criminal assaults. I mean, these are the action. I mean, you deal with it that way, you got a lot better leg to stand on other than this prior restraint thing, this minority report kind of stuff where you're going out and you might. I'm willing to take the risk. And when somebody does, then but then it'll be too late. Too late what? If you already have a government that has this ability to prior restraint and just go in and get people, that's the threat.
It's a major threat because they always, you give them an inch and they always come and they take a mile.
A parsec.
They got prosecutors sitting around dreaming up whatever little way of twisting any law you give them into. And even in the end, I guarantee if there's no quarantine laws whatsoever, it wouldn't matter. They'd still, if they wanted to grab you for whatever reason, they'd grab you.
Okay, now let's talk about, because I, you know, now I got my contact at the Arizona State Department of Health Services calling me at home in the evening wanting to be my buddy.
We'll see when they stop returning your calls.
Yeah, I got another call coming. So this call here, I want to dwell in on this, what you found out here. They got laws that they go, well, it's not published yet. Yeah, we got it here, but we're just not showing you.
I'm willing to bet you those laws were passed not this year, but a while back, and for whatever reason, it's an oversight.
Oh. Okay, now let me go ahead and write this down. Now, where is this law? I mean, it's a part
Arizona
of
Arizona Revised Statute.
ARS.
Chapter 36-, and I believe it's 787. It's 780-something. It's broken up into three articles. There's Article 11, 12, and 13. If you look, each one of those articles have a title to them, and each one of them, except for Article 12, actually have separate laws in them that you can click on and you can go read the law. They're public health laws. Article 12, if you look at the separation between where the laws stop in Article 11 and where they pick up in Article 13, there's 32 laws missing.
Well, how do you know there's 32?
Because you can see they're consecutively numbered. So it's like, boom, it stops here at this number. Picks up again at this number, and it's like, well, there's 32 numbers in between.
And you just click on it, and it says that
if you take one of the website links from Article 11 or 13, and simply they're consecutive numbers, so you just change the little number up there on the web thing to fall within where those numbers should be in Article 12, and then, you know, click, you know, load, you get a little thing that says, oh, those things haven't been put up yet. Sorry.
Wow.
Now, you may be right. Maybe they are something that just got passed and they haven't had time to put them up. But in my experience...
In my experience,
they're pretty good about getting those things up.
They put them up before they even vote on them. You know, this is... When Powell and I have experience in this very thing. We were working with Senator Karen Johnson. She was very upset about this Amaro threat, you know, us losing sovereignty of our money and so on. And she just, Ernie, you're creative. Come on in my office. Let's talk about what can we do. So Powell and I, we thought about it a little bit, and we go, yeah, you can coin your own medallions and so on in the state of Arizona. You can make gold, you know, because we were searching around where this happened. It was a sesquicentennial, which is 150 year, I think, of Oklahoma had done this, to where they had created, you know, an ounce medallion, gold or a medal or something that was to commemorate their 150 years. Well, our centennial's coming up in 2012. So we go, okay, We'll have Arizona's commemorative medallion of our centennial blah, blah, blah that will be in disc form that will not be to exceed 5 millimeters in thickness, that will have side one and two, that will have the seal of. And we describe this medallion, not a coin, you know, not money, not, you know, it's a medallion. And it provided numerous things. Yeah, we need to add silver and copper and, you know, so. Right now, it passed because they didn't know that libertarians had anything to do with it. And they had a commemorative oh, yeah, it's a great idea. We want to mint all these gold things we can give to our friends, you know, instead of going, yeah. But in law, we want it to have the ability to be produced to supply all public demand. And it be pure gold, 0.9, you know, 99999. And what was the other thing? Oh, yeah. And there was some other stuff in there. But the main thing, in sufficient quantity to supply all public demand. And it be administered by the state treasurer. Well, it passed almost unanimously. And the only guy, one legislator out of 90 voted against it. And the only reason he voted against it is because we were down there and one of the people that were working on it let it slip that we were behind it. It was Ron Gould from Lake Havasu. And he's usually a pretty good guy, but he was like, oh, no, I'm not getting involved in this libertarian stuff. But what happened was now we have this law on the books. But what they did is every time at every step of the passage of this law, we would have to look at it from legislative counsel because it kept changing it. They would say, oh, yeah, it was medallions, not to exceed one troy ounce. Because the thing was is that we wanted to make sure that you could have more than one size denomination. Medallions. And he kept changing stuff and saying you couldn't and this, that. And we had to go back and keep getting a change. Even after they voted on it, of the version that they had that passed, the legislative council would change it. These guys are bad people. It's your government. This is how it works. This is how it works. Well, here it comes again. And we're going to be finding out where the missing laws are. Maybe we can find it here in the break. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Sorrow. I mean, and if I don't have enough reason, I mean, wow. I'm looking at what Powell said here. This is how it works. Okay. I mean, I'm going to show you. I did exactly what he said to do. It is, and we'll go ahead and I'll make the phone call, and they're not listening to this now. Well, maybe not. Okay. You know, I'll call the Arizona Department. I call my woman. I say, hey, baby, what's happening? How you been doing? I go, look, this is what I need to know. We're going to go, and I'm going to follow her through it. I'll go and take this information. I'll put it on top of Freedom's Phoenix. I'll put it in the show archive. I'll get all the information, make it easy for them. They're going to go, okay, now click on this. Now you see this? All right, that's good. Now click on this. And I see here, it says, because it says Article 11, you know, betting. I don't know what the heck that's all about. You know, Article 9, enhanced surveillance, advisories, public health, emergencies, 11, betting, 13, sickle cell anemia, 14, tobacco sales. You know, it's all this health stuff, right? So then you have Article 12, public health crisis. Wow, I want to see Article 12, I think. You know, it sounds appropriate, timely. Let's go to Article 12. You know, and when did they do this? I say, wait a minute, before you call Ernie, it's not there, you know, I'm going, no, you guys are killing me. So then he goes, and you have Article 11, it says, ARS, Arizona Revised Statute, if you put this in, you know, a browser, ARS 36-796.08. Because then you have, you know, 796, and it's 796.02, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, then it skips to 797.41. Now, I mean, you just got, all of a sudden there's a break. But between those, it says Article 12, public health crisis, and there's nothing there. So when you look at and you go, all right, well, I'm going to go to 36796.08. And when you do that, in the address, the URL at the top, it'll have, you know, that code. So you go, all right, well, I'll change it to 0.09. Let's just go to the next one. Okay, well, what happens to the next one? Let's do that. What does it say? You know, it goes, the requested document has not been posted to the website yet. Did they have a plan to do that? I was just wondering. You know, I got public health care crisis is blank. Okay? I'm fairly concerned. I think because you knew this was going to happen. You know, as we do this, we're going up. We start at the bottom, and they pass it up, pass it up, pass it up, pass it up, pass it up. Finally, you get to the, where they're going to do it, and then pay no attention here. Move along. We deleted it. Well, Powell, he was, you know, head of this. This was your job, man. He knew where to look. Did it surprise you it was gone?
I was actually stunned, especially when I realized there's 32 friggin' things there, links that are, that should be there that are missing. It's like, you know, like you said, I'm kind of like curious. Public health crisis. I think I'd like to see what's in that section.
No, you stay here, okay? After this show, I mean, as soon as the mic is off, we'll do it. We'll make the phone call, you know, and we'll tape it. We'll play it tomorrow. I'm gonna go. Hello. You know, this is, you always catch them in this kind of stuff. It's their nature. They lie whether it's in their best interest or not. You know, there's a plan. It's already in place, people. This is the whole point that we're trying to make. The only thing that stops it is the people being ready to riot, to rise up if they declare this emergency. That's all they have to do. It's just a piece of paper they sign. Here, sign this, and you get your billions for your state. It's worth it. Come on, you know, what's the problem? You know, that's for the good of the peoples. This is the only thing to say. It's already starting in other states. You know, what are you doing? Well, hopefully we can inspire you. We'll see you tomorrow. Give you, you know, what happened. And we're going to do it right now. So you tune back in tomorrow and we'll start right off with what we found out. Declare your independence. And you don't even need a government form.